Bloomberg Flash Focus, your source for fast and focused analysis on foreign policy and national security news from around the world. My name is Carrie Filippetti, and I'm the executive director of the Vandenberg Coalition and filling in today for your usual host, Sam Byers. Today, we're back to speaking about Haiti, a topic we covered a few weeks ago upon the announcement of a Kenyan security force deployment to Haiti, which had been thrown into chaos since the assassination of their president in 2021. But since then, the situation has only worsened for Haiti, which seems now to be on the brink of anarchy. So what's going on? To discuss this, we once again have Anna Quintana, who is currently the senior policy director at the Vandenberg Coalition and who previously served as the Western Hemisphere lead on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. We also have a new guest, Juan Cruz, who's the former special assistant to the president and senior director for Western Hemisphere Affairs and currently a senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Thank you both for being here. We have seen a ton of information about Haiti flooding the news, from near complete gang control of Haiti's capital, to a prime minister stranded in Puerto Rico, to outbreaks of disease, to Governor Ron DeSantis ordering up the Florida State Guard to monitor for potential waves of Haitian migrants. So help catch us up, because it feels like we're on the brink of a civil war. What exactly is going on? And maybe we'll start with you, Juan.
Well, thank you, Carrie. You know, it sure does feel like we're on the brink of a civil war. So Haiti's become a collapsed state, a failed state, and I'd even question whether it's a state, right? You've got an unelected president who we have a lack of a functioning legislature, a court system that doesn't work, a constitution that's just a suggestion. And we haven't had elections in 8 years. And in the last two elections before that, 20% of the population came out and voted. So, yeah, that gives you an idea of where we are in the situation. We've seen a slippery slope of decline. It seems like Haiti, you know, careens off a cliff and hits every single rock on the way down. And I think we've probably missed or ignored some important warning signs. We had clues. You know, let's go back to, you know, October 2022, when the acting president, you know, Ariel Henry comes out and asks for a multinational security force and was promptly ignored by all the above. And he wanted that precisely to contain the gang, something that, as we've seen today, is out of control and threatens the existence of any kind of normalcy, democracy, or anything else in Haiti. And whose fault is that? Well, it's less about blame, and what you'll see in Haiti, there's a lot of blame to go around. But it is something where today we find ourselves outsourcing security in Haiti by going to the Africans, in this case, the Kenyans, because they're probably the only entity out there that hasn't already had skin in the game on Haiti and has come away with you know, sort of cinched. And that includes the UN and the OAS and Brazil and Chile and France and Canada and the US multiple times. So what we have is a chaotic situation. But I do want to pause there and say Haiti's chaos is not something that occurred today or 5 years ago or with the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. Haiti's chaos, some would say, goes back to its independence, you know, in the early 1800s, 1804, I believe, where it started off immediately in a civil war. So your question circling around, are we seeing a civil war in Haiti's? Man, it certainly feels that way.
And I'd love to ask, because it struck me as sort of odd that we're talking about this, who was originally the acting prime minister, Ariel Henry, being stranded in Puerto Rico. We're talking about being, you know, close to what feels like a civil war. So who's leading Haiti right now? And can you explain why the acting prime minister, Henry, was stranded in Puerto Rico and I think still is to this day?
Sure. Yeah. No. So Henry left Haiti a few weeks ago, about close to 3 weeks ago now, to go to Kenya to finalize the deal for the multinational security force support mission. And that mission is widely unpopular within Haiti. Obviously, polling within Haiti is never an accurate science, but, you know, kind of amongst the Haitian stakeholders, this idea of another kind of foreign intervention to stabilize the country is unpopular. And so the gangs, and I think this is now going to be has essentially been the best example of how gangs in Haiti don't operate in a vacuum. They are essentially a tool of various political stakeholders, began unleashing this massive wave of violence to force Henri from his position in government and to start the process of some sort of other, you know, kind of political transition or kind of stakeholder government. So right now, Henri is quote unquote governing from Haiti, I mean, rather from Puerto Rico. He has stated that he will resign once there is a transition council that has been appointed and accepted and has been in place. That transition council, those names have been sent over to CARICOM, and CARICOM leaders are now working to finalize as to whether they support these individuals or not.
Okay, got it. And so I'm always curious, at Vandenberg, one of the main things that we try to focus on is what is the American interest here? So Haiti is not a country that most Americans track closely. It is, though, only, I think, less than 700 miles from our coast. So Juan, what is the American interest or responsibility in what's happening in Haiti right now?
We have a host of interests and national security interests vis-a-vis Haiti. And I think the principal one is the issue of migration. And of course, you know, we've seen repeated occasions in the history, 1980s in particular, 1990s again, Haitian boat people, large numbers of Haitians coming to Florida in that case, and also to Puerto Rico and Jamaica to some extent, and even the Bahamas. But it basically this large exodus, migration. And of course, migration being a number one issue in the United States among the populace, the electoral issue. We also have the fact that Haitians have been coming overland in the last few years. 70,000 of them have reached our border last year. That's an impressive amount, and what we want to do is limit that. But it's not just about migration. It's about drug trafficking, for example. During Haiti's recent history, it's been the focus of drug trafficking activity, and we wouldn't want to open up some sort of chaotic, criminal-based government, which is what we would get with the gangs, a mobocracy or a theocracy. I'm sorry, thieveocracy. Or a kleptocracy. And what we want to do is avoid having this criminal government at our doorstep. In the U.S., we also care about our allies. And Haiti shares an island with the Dominican Republic, and it would quickly be positioned to destabilize the DR and to challenge resources from a country that's being, you know, well and properly run right now. Let's also talk about, you know, as Americans, we care about people. It's just, you know, it's one of our signature characteristics as Americans, and we'd like to protect the human rights of folk. And can we really, you know, afford to sit back and do nothing? You know, maybe this is the next humanitarian disaster unfolds before our eyes, and we've been invested in Haiti for too long, and in many occasions, and we're just not positioned to walk away from it. And lastly, I'd say, you know, as we're a law and order country, and we'd like to promote order and not chaos.
All right. So Juan, we've seen the Biden administration claim that to address the political crisis and form a government, Haiti really needs this deployment of the multinational security support mission to combat the gang violence. But Haitians have always been skeptical of foreign boots on the ground, given the somewhat disastrous legacy of UN peacekeepers. Given how the recent wave of gang violence was catalyzed by political actors against the multinational security support mission, how effective is a strategy that sequences security before political reconciliation?
Kerry, this is a tough one. You're absolutely right. You know, we need to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. In this case, we do need some sort of security force. And I don't know if the Kenyans are the right response, but they're the ones willing to step in, right? The U.S. has said that it's willing to do just about anything except put boots on the ground. And to that effect, you know, we're willing to cut a check. You know, it's 200 million now. We're up to 200 million to cover what the Kenyan costs would be, and over 50 million to provide, you know, health and food assistance. But the bottom line is we don't really want to go in, and the Canadians don't want to go in, and no one else wants to go in, but the Kenyans are willing to go. And the Kenyans probably have their own reasons for doing this, but, you know, given the long history of military intervention and presence in Haiti, I can see how the Haitians would be very reluctant. But the bottom line is, if you need some sort of security on the ground to be able to contain the gangs. But my question is, then what? The gangs have been contained in the past, and upheaval have been contained in the past. In fact, during the last U.S. Presence in Haiti, I think casualties were, you know, less than five, and we were there for, I don't know, I can't remember, 8 years. And so the idea is, it can be pretty effective to contain banditry and gangs and upheaval. But then what? I'm really not quite sure what we plan to do once the Kenyans are effective in Haiti, assuming they're effective. What's the next step? I'm not sure that we've gotten clarity on that and that we absolutely know, because as you pointed out, we have a history, in fact, the international community has a long history of failure in Haiti. And is this just going to be the next chapter of failure, or have we learned something from it? And what is that something? And how are we going to move forward? And how is this money actually, rather than feed the Haitians, is going to teach them how to fish on their own?
Well, so, and these are all really good questions, Juan, and it reminds me of something that our U.S. ambassador to the U.N. recently said, which was, she said, quote, the U.S. is committed to providing the mission to Haiti what it needs to succeed, end quote. And so, you know, maybe I'll start with you, Juan, and then I'd love Anna's view on the same question. But so what does that mean? I mean, if we don't want to get involved and if we're not sure how Haiti's going to answer these questions after the security forces are there, how should we interpret this message?
In some ways, it discomforts me. You know, it's not really true. We're willing to do anything. We're not willing to do anything. So far, what we've shown is that we're willing to sign a check and let others do something. And I do applaud CARICOM and others for, you know, kind of bringing us together, convening a meeting and bringing us all together, sort of different stakeholders. That was missing. And I really do think we need to tip our hat to CARICOM for that role. But the U.S. has, you know, its role is, okay, so now we cut this check. And what have we learned from our many mistakes in Haiti? Are we prepared to properly run things now? Are we going to instill programs that have longevity and a lasting impact? Haiti is littered with the empty shells of failed programs. How is this going to be any different?
Anna, do you have any sense that this could be different, or do you share Juan's sentiments?
No, I share Juan's skepticism in this, and the fact that I completely agree with him that it was completely unfair of the ambassador to say that we're willing to do whatever. And the other thing that I think the administration is missing here is that message is not just being received by the Haitians, but it's also being looked at by Congress as well, right? The same Congress that right now they're currently deliberating the future of assistance to Ukraine. Now Congress is wondering, is this potentially another open-ended conflict? Yes, that we're sponsoring, but at some point that we could potentially also have to get involved in, that there is no clear plan. The administration only released their plan for the MSS on March 1st, yet they've been asking Congress for the funds since last October. The administration has been, they are under their, they're legislatively obligated right now to have a new plan for Haiti under the Global Fragility Act. That has not been done. I mean, there's just so many instances in which Haiti was supposed, right, their Haiti policy was supposed to deviate from the mistakes and the many lessons learned from the past. But essentially, we're just seeing this like rinse and repeat, and maybe just like, you know, kind of putting a little like sugar coating here, like letting it be the Kenyans versus some other country. But we're essentially doing the exact same thing over and over again. And I think one of the big problems that they could, that not only just Haiti is going to find themselves in, but the United States could find itself in vis-a-vis its Haiti policy is, we have elections coming up in November. Election year, developing policy in an election year, especially a policy that involves a potential foreign entanglement, is never going to be popular. And it's going to cause people to make very politically motivated decisions versus kind of sound policy decisions. And that being said, you know, especially if there is a transition, what does that mean for the potential of this MSS, right? What if the MSS was in the process of being successful, but then the next administration decides to, you know, kind of take it back a little bit, or, you know, dial back U.S. support because they just haven't been fully bought into what the Biden administration has done. And I think, you know, the comments by Ambassador Thomas Greenfield just don't add to their case that they're taking Haiti responsibly.
Well, you both have dealt with Haiti for many years, and over the course of this conversation, you've mentioned a few folks, I think three leaders overall, who have been either assassinated or forced out in recent history. So how do we get out of this quagmire? I mean, what should we or other actors be doing differently? And maybe we'll start with Anna.
So, you know, we shouldn't look at Haiti in terms of how can we solve Haiti, but we rather need to look at it in terms of like, what are the areas in which we can make actual tangible progress in, right? Haiti as a comprehensive thing as a comprehensive entity in terms of U.S. policy is it's just this intractable challenge that unfortunately is just it's going to be there for a considerable period of time. And I think right now the focus, the prioritization needs to be achieving some sort of transition government and working with said transition government on stabilizing the security conditions to a point where elections can be held, right? They haven't held elections since 2016.
Kerry, you know, Haiti's a hot mess. And how do we fix Haiti? That's a huge question. But the first thing we need to do is get things under control, get the violence under control, get control of the port, get control of the airport, make sure that we start opening embassies again and people return and you get these the gangs back under control and whatever it takes to do that. And the answer to that is absolutely a security, some sort of security relief with boots on the ground of some sort. But that's just the first stage. Anna and I have both said several times in this conversation that, you know, we need to learn from our mistakes of the past. And the first thing we need to do, I think, is to develop or to make a list of the things that have actually worked in Haiti. Not everything's a disaster. And some of those include, and I think this will be a little bit controversial, is the police force. We have 3,000 policemen, you know, trying to, in a country of 11 million people, that's woefully insufficient. But, you know, after having failed at trying to create some sort of reliable Haitian police force, I think we're closer than we've ever been. And these guys have been in a really disadvantageous position. They've been trained thoroughly by the U.S., Canadians, and others. And they've been doing a huge effort. I think that whatever it is that we did in with the police force at work, we need to build that out at scale, right? We need 3,000 is not enough. And what we need to do is come up with whatever conventional number is usually thought of in terms of being able to police a population of 11 million people, or if nothing else, the major urban centers. I think we also need to learn how to divide labor among the many stakeholders. I've said earlier, you know, there's a lot of examples of failure, but the fact is that, you know, we have a community of nations that have been in Haiti and have an interest in Haiti that includes the French and the Canadians and others. There's got to be a better way for us to divide labor so that we don't stumble over each other to do the same things, and we decide who's going to help in infrastructure and who's going to help train the police and who's going to help, you know, modernize and how do we build infrastructure in Haiti that's not to our standards, but it's at a standards that the Haitians themselves can build and maintain. Because if you look, part of what everyone is going through right now is a bit of a donor fatigue in Haiti and a kind of an agnostic feeling about Haiti, because we've been there many, many times. Like I said before, the UN and the OAS and everyone's had a try at this, including in 2010 when we had the devastating earthquake in Haiti. And what we had is the world community responding. There wasn't even enough room on the tarmac at the airport with all these flights coming in from all around the world, including, I may say, Russia and China, but everyone trying to help out in Haiti, because even, you know, the presidential palace, the Congress, any building worth its salt was damaged heavily and oftentimes rendered useless as a result of the earthquake. And yet, after all this help, ultimately lasting effect of all that assistance is really hard to find in Haiti. You still find heaps of rubble from the earthquake that hasn't been, you know, hauled away. So let's look at how to divide our labor, not rush to do everything on our own, and get back to the point that the Haitians have complained recently that they haven't been allowed to do things on their own. Well, let's invite them in. They're clamoring for homespun solutions. Let's get them involved in every stage of this. And this way they're invested, has skin in the game, and can't say that it's been imposed by the outside.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us and sharing your thoughts on this incredibly complicated situation, which only threatens to get worse, it sounds like, from this conversation. I'm very grateful that we have men and women like you working on this. And we just appreciate your being here with us today and letting the rest of the world know about what's going on. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for listening in. If you have not already, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share this with your friends and family. And we will see you next time on the Vandenberg Flash Focus.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Flash Focus is a production of the Vandenberg Coalition. To connect and stay up to date on our work, follow our account on X @VandenbergCo.
or visit www.vandenbergcoalition.org to learn more and subscribe to our weekly newsletter on foreign policy and national security, Beyond the Water's Edge. Until next time, I'm Samuel Byers, and this is Vandenberg Flash Focus.